You stand for the reading of the Word of God. Comes to us once again this morning from the 5th chapter of Matthew's Gospel. We continue through the Sermon on the Mount. This morning we begin in the 27th verse, Matthew 5, 27. Jesus said, "You've heard that it was said, 'You shall not commit adultery.' But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to go into hell." It's the Word of God for the people of God. May be seated. In 1976, Jimmy Carter was a relatively unknown, outside the Southeast, underdog candidate for president. He had built, surprisingly, a rather large lead in the polls over Gerald Ford. In 1976, I wasn't particularly interested in politics. I was 16 years old at the time. I had other things on my mind as a 16-year-old. But when it came out that Jimmy Carter had done an interview with Playboy magazine, politics became a little more interesting. Though my parents somehow didn't think an interview with Jimmy Carter was a good enough reason to buy me a copy of the magazine. But it has the Jimmy Carter interview, I argue. I doubt anyone remembers anything about that interview except Carter's candid admission in it. "I've looked on a lot of women with lust. I've committed adultery in my heart many times." Some people thought it made him really relatable. Other people thought it was some kind of humble brag, sort of an admission to something so small, at least in their eyes, not in his, that he was really just touting how virtuous that he was. That year, the chair of the state Democratic Party, a woman, by the way, said something along the lines of, "I don't know what the heck he was talking about. What was he thinking?" Interestingly, it didn't help him in the polls. That rather large lead began to deteriorate. Time magazine accounted it among the top 10 unfortunate political one-liners. But at the time, most people didn't know what to make of Carter. And they sure didn't know how seriously he took the Bible and how seriously he took his commitment to follow Jesus. It's kind of funny and really a bit ironic that probably no one in history gave more publicity to these verses in the Sermon on the Mount than Jimmy Carter, Hugh Hefner, and Playboy magazine. And I imagine it sparked quite a bit of debate in those days among people about this controversial statement of Jesus that lust in your heart is the same as an act of adultery. But remember what I've been saying about the Sermon on the Mount. It is teaching for disciples. Those who have repented, changed their focus, their way of looking at God, ourselves, and the world that we live in, and committed ourselves to follow Jesus in an attitude of study, obedience, and imitation. For everyone else, much of what Jesus says here will make no sense, and it will appear as impractical idealism, things that aren't realistic in the real world for normal people. And I suggested that based on what Jesus says in the sermon, he is not writing a new law for Christians here. Rather, he is teaching his followers how to obey an old law. In this case, how do you not commit adultery, he was talking about. Well, Jesus says, you don't make it your aim to not commit adultery. You aim for something higher. Remember, Jesus is trying to transform people from the inside out, not simply asking us to conform to something from the outside in hopes that it might make it a change on the inside. And really, it's not that the law didn't already deal with the issue of lust. The 10th commandment, remember, said, "Thou shalt not covet your neighbor's house or your neighbor's wife or his servants or anything else that belongs to him." Seems to me that coveting and lust are interchangeable words here. In fact, I often say if we could just keep the first commandment and the 10th commandment, all the rest wouldn't be a problem. If I could have no other gods before me, and if I could manage to not covet, I could take care of everything else. Once again, Jesus is teaching us, how do you obey the law? I often say when I preach that I'm preaching to myself. And the rest of you get to overhear how God is dealing with me through the Word. And today is no exception. But I also have to wonder if Jesus, the Word made flesh, who dwelt among us, the great high priest who is sympathetic to us because he has been tested as we are, yet without sin, is doing somewhat the same thing. I think Jesus in his humanity truly understands the vulnerability our humanity brings to us for things like anger or contempt or lust or divorce or pride or prejudice or any of those things that he talks about in here. There's an old saying that says, you're preaching to the choir. You ever heard that? Which basically means you're preaching to people who don't really need to hear this stuff. But when it comes to lust, I expect most of us probably still need to hear this stuff. And when I say I'm preaching to the choir, I mean metaphorically all you choir who are out there. I mean, today we're all the choir, right? Literally. Let me also say that as we get started, Jesus is talking to a group of men here. And men are particularly vulnerable. I'm told we are very visual in what drives desire. Even Genesis, when it tells the story about the origins of sin, captures that when it says about the fruit of the forbidden tree, seeing that the fruit was pleasing to the eye. In other words, it looked good to them. It was part of its temptation. So maybe the question that we're wrestling with in Jesus' teaching today is, what is looking with lust versus just looking? I mean, there has to be a difference, right, in looking and lust. Why would God give us the capacity to appreciate beauty, give to us sexuality as a natural and good part of our humanity and marriage, if looking is wrong? So I think you can say that even looking that creates desire is not necessarily lust in the heart. The literal translation of this verse would be something like looking at a woman with the purpose of desiring her. It sounds redundant, but what it means is, if we desire to desire, that's the problem. It's the purpose with which we look that becomes the problem, according to Jesus. As is often is the case in Jesus' teaching, motive matters. I think it's what Peter means in 2 Peter 2:14 when he uses the expression, they have eyes full of adultery, meaning these are not just unwilling victims of desire and temptation. These are practitioners of a chosen habit of looking. So, if I look, and there's an attractive woman, and I think, wow, that's a really beautiful woman. And even if seeing her beauty creates some sense of desire, that's not exactly what Jesus equates with adultery. Not yet, anyway. It really depends on where that feeling of desire goes from there. On the other hand, if you listen to what Jesus said, you might say that choosing to look at pornography is looking for the purpose of desire, right? Desire to create desire. Unless, of course, you just wanted to read the Jimmy Carter interview and you didn't know what page it was on. And then we start to ask questions like, does it matter if the man is married or if the woman that he looks at is married? After all, Jesus equates it with adultery, right? Which is sexual expression outside of marriage. We can make this whole thing really complicated, particularly if we're looking for loopholes. The Pharisees did that a lot. Or if, on the other hand, we're struggling with some unhealthy sense of guilt and beating ourselves up for every thought that happens to run through our mind. Healthy self-awareness and God-led self-examination are usually enough for a believer to know when we've crossed the line into a dangerous place. The real problem is when we know we have, and we do it anyway. Remember when Paul said, beware when you think you are standing, lest you fall. What he's talking about is a lack of self-awareness. Evil is always a perversion of the good. And temptation normally is exploiting something that is good and God-given and trying to turn it into something that is destructive to our souls and our relationship with God and with each other. The evidence of that is all around us. We're also particularly vulnerable in our culture to lust because It seems like we utilize or exploit sexual desire for advertising to sell almost anything. TV shows, movies, books, cars, shaving cream, you name it. We are being conditioned to desire. We are being conditioned to be vulnerable to lust. And one other thing. As believers, our vulnerability to lust is rooted in intimacy being a spiritual hunger of the soul, not just a physical desire. When Genesis says, "For this reason a man leaves his mother and father and clings to his wife, and the two become one flesh," he is tying our sexuality to our spirituality, which is also why God ties sexuality to a solemn covenantal relationship for life. One flesh is the mingling of souls, not just bodies. Hence the teaching that follows this in the Sermon on the Mount on marriage and divorce. So what do we do about it becomes the real question. Well, remember the story of Job? Job was a man who sought to be righteous. In fact, he was righteous. In fact, he was so righteous that God held him up before Satan as the epitome of what a righteous man is like. At one point in Job's lament, he talks about this attempt to live a righteous life. And he says something that I think Jesus bases some of his teaching out of. He says this, "I have made a covenant with my eyes, not to look with lust." And then he examines himself and he warns this, "If my heart has walked after my eyes, I'm getting in trouble." And then the next step he says, "If then my heart is captured by the wife of another, I'm in trouble." And then he says the next step is, "If I have sought opportunity with her, then I'm in trouble." That, he said, would be a heinous crime. In other words, what he's talking about is that is where looking becomes lust, that becomes the essence of adultery that Jesus talks about. So first, Job knows something important about not falling victim to lust. He says, you make a decision, a commitment, an agreement with yourself about how you will and will not look. And we make that decision ahead of time is what Job is saying, because in the moment, we won't make that decision. That's what a covenant is, right? A covenant is a commitment that's made in a time of strength that will protect us when we find ourselves in a time of weakness. In this warning about lust, Jesus makes this absurd, extreme statement. If your right eye causes you to sin, gouge it out. Well, obviously, he's not being literal here. But I think what he does mean is because we are visually vulnerable, that what we see creates desire, we have to be really careful about how we look or don't look. I mean, Paul says in one of his letters, we should flee immorality. In other words, Paul says sometimes you should just run away. And sometimes that's absolutely true. We shouldn't put ourselves in certain places. But you can't just refuse to look at anyone, everyone. I mean, unlike some cultures, you can't put the responsibility back on the woman, right? Like in some strict Muslim world where they say she has to be covered from the top of her head to the soles of her feet. According to Jesus, the problem is not with her beauty. The problem is with the man's heart. So we have to work on our hearts, Jesus says. Secondly, Job says, having made that agreement with my eyes, I can't let my heart walk after what I see. You might remember some of you back in Lent, I preached a series of sermons on sin. And I suggested that the way sin works is it always begins with a thought. Now, thought is often introduced to our mind by what I see, right? An image generates a thought. Even words create visual images in our minds that becomes a thought. That thought, I said, if it's dwelled on long enough, will make its way from our mind into our heart, where it's converted from a thought into desire. It is much harder to deal with when it moves there. See, a thought can be weighed objectively. Desire cannot. Then, that desire is at work in my heart, which is also the seat of my will. And it will enlist my mind to create rationalization for the fulfillment of that desire that is now in my heart. It's what Paul meant when he said something like, what is the matter with me? The things I don't want to do, I end up doing. That's what's the matter with him. It also goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway. Jesus is not saying, if lust is the same as adultery, you might as well go ahead and do it anyway. That's flawed logic, right? That's the way sin thinks. This is what Job means by not letting my heart walk after my eyes. I have to be able to cut off nurturing of thought into desire, where desire grows into lust. If I do, Job says, I risk my heart being captured by the wife of another, actually being captured by my desire for the wife of another. So lust, simply put, is unchecked or nurtured desire that is simply a response to what I see. Now we could go on, but let me leave you with the timeless wisdom of the outlaw Josie Wales. A man's got to know his limitations. If we don't, we will be in trouble and we will be outgunned by lust. And the end of that might be really devastating.